Yeah, see, now we're getting people writing in. This is like claiming they were in the gardens in 93.
They remember the crutch?
Yeah.
No crutch guy?
Well, Rod is tweeting and saying, I was actually at the game where the guy threw the crutch over the boards. We watched him hop down one of the aisles with his crutches.
I want to know who it is. How old was he?
It doesn't give me details. Rod, tweet us more details on like what was up with this guy that threw his crutch on the ice in 93.
Yeah, so, like, was he an old codger back then, or what? Like, what was his deal?
He wasn't fully committed to it because he obviously kept the other one. So, like, if he really hated McSorley, he would have thrown both crutches on the ice.
Still, like, I like the detail. It's like we watched him hobble down the aisle, get to the glass, and throw a crutch over.
Right.
Like back then, ushers are like, "Nah, that's all right. Nothing to see here.
Go ahead." Like, I mean, honestly, if you were an usher, to be fair to them, would you think the guy who is, he's got a broken leg, is getting to the glass to throw his crutch on the ice? You know, why would you ever think that guy is possibly going to be a menace and throw his crutch on the ice?
Do you guys remember, I think I've told you guys this before, do you remember in Calgary where the naked guy with the red socks jumped over the glass and knocked himself out?
Yes.
Like, I was...
You were on the bench, were you not?
Yeah, I was right across from him because he was he climbed the penalty box glass and then fell off that on his head and was completely naked with the red socks. Like, these are crazy situations. People have to remember that, like a guy hobbling down and throwing a crutch onto the ice.
Yes, we need more details. We need more details. All right, well, we got a guy on the line who was in the building, right? He was there.
Piano guy.
Yes, he's an inspiration. We know that. He's the hockey outsider, our main man. He's back on the panel tomorrow for Leafs Wild. Here's Bob McKenzie. How you doing, Bob?
Hey, fellas. How you doing?
We're doing well. We were obviously discussing the kind of crazy scene down in Jersey last night with people throwing stuff on the ice. And it led to someone sending us a tweet. And the three of us did not remember this. Someone said that back in 93, after McSorley hit Gilmore and then Clark and McSorley fought, I think it was game one, someone threw a crutch on the ice. You were there. Do you remember seeing someone throw a crutch on the ice?
You know what the funny thing is? So, let's see. You're saying that was game one?
I believe it was game one.
Whenever McSorley hit Gilmore, there
was across the middle,
after.
And then Clark fought McSorley. It was late in the game.
Yeah, but here's the thing. The funny thing is, I was starting a lot more work at the time I was working for the Toronto Star, but part of my deal with the Star when I went there included that I said, you have to understand, I do have responsibilities at TSN, so you've got to make room in the schedule for them. So covering the Memorial Cup for TSN was one of my things. And the Memorial Cup was on, if I remember correctly, that year it would have been in Sault Ste. Marie. And but I don't remember exactly which Memorial Cup it was. But in any case, I didn't pick up that Kings Leafs series until game number four.
Ooh, okay.
Game number five, which, ironically enough, was Piano in the Back Night.
You had to show up for that one, didn't you, Bob?
So I came in hot.
I would say so. What an inspiration.
Did Gretz ever talk to you, Bobby, about that comment? Did he ever say, like, oh, I remember that comment? Did you ever exchange, like, a little chat with Gretz about...
Put it this way. When he went to... I didn't get to the Stanley Cup Final media day because they had it, like, a day or two before the Cup Final actually began. And when Gretz did his media availability in Montreal, a day or two before the Cup Final began, he basically went to town on me in the column to the entire media and everybody else that was there. And then if I remember correctly, it was very frosty final for me and Wayne. And I didn't personally come across Wayne, other than being in the dressing room and whatever, but I could tell he was mad, and that was fine, so I gave him his space, but I was there and doing my job, whatever. And then the next season, he was going to pass Gordy, and so the Stars set me on the trail to follow Wayne until he passed Gordy, and so I was in Los Angeles, and it was actually the first night that they sent me, and I was there along with most of the other media in the National Hockey League, and that was the night he passed them. And afterwards, I was kind of curious as to what reception I might get, and I always remember there was a media room, and it was just like packed with media people. And after the game, Wayne came in, and he had his skates off, he had his shoulder pads and sweater off, but he still had on his pants and his shin pads, and he was wearing a pair of flip-flops. And he walked in, and he saw me, and he looked at me, and I'm like, oh, boy. And he came over and shook my hand and gave me a little bit of a hug and said, hey, really appreciate you being here for this. And I said, oh, wouldn't have missed it, and I'm really honored to be here. So, and that was that. So that's when I knew it was over.
There you go. Well, yeah, I mean, wow. He's passing Gordie Howe. You would think it's time to move on at that point. And he did show up in Game 7, which is probably an important, you know, part of the context back in 93. Any other crazy events you can think of, Bob, being in the rink for, you know, like stuff being thrown on the ice, fights in the stands, you know, like what can you recall?
Probably the biggest thing covering the Leafs back in the day when things weren't going well was the obligatory throwing the jersey on the ice. And then there was the waffles and there was this and that and everything else. But every so often somebody would throw the jersey on the ice or guys would show up wearing the paper bags over their head and that sort of thing. But that was a remarkable one last night. I mean, 3 goals, all disallowed. And I thought 2 of the 3 of them were legit. I thought the first one was a little iffy. But in any case, that was a fun night of hockey, and it was an exciting game, and Leafs did very, very well. So,
yeah, they did. They're in a weird place right now, aren't they, Bob? With all these injuries, you know, like Jordy Ben goes down last night, Riley's out, Brody's out, yet they keep winning. And I mean, I guess Sheldon Keefe, how much credit do you think he deserves, considering how, you know, crazy the season's been in the last few years and the noise around the team and the lame duck stuff? Where do you stand on that?
Yeah, I was watching the game last night, and I made this observation, and I said, texted a friend of mine, and I said, this Sheldon Keefe guy is coaching his ass off. Mm-hmm. And in fairness to the players, I don't want to give the coach all the credit. The players are playing their ass off. And I mean, when you look at this objectively, forget about the big picture. So the big picture is Leafs haven't won a Stanley Cup since 67. They can't win a first round of series to save their life. You know, we can get the whole big snowball and roll it down the hill if we want. And that. But just in the context of Toronto Maple Leafs 2000 and this season, the 22-23 season, the way it started, the hole that they were in, the absolute apoplexy that was consuming everybody because of losses to Montreal and Arizona and every other crappy team in the league that they couldn't beat. You know, people said that was it. Never mind not being able to win a first round. They're not going to make the playoffs. This whole thing is broken. Fire Dubas, fire Keith. Get rid of everybody. Matthews stinks, Marner stinks, you know, and what have you. And then all of a sudden, it's like, boom, they've done a really good job. We anticipated the goaltending would be really problematic, and so far it really hasn't been. In fact, it's been, you know, at worst average, and at times, like it was last night, above average. When you look at the list of defensemen that are injured, and keep in mind, most people look at the Leafs defense and say, oh, they're not built to win a cup, or they're not built to win this or that. And even with Riley, even with Muzzin, even with Brody, even with everybody, it's not good enough. Well, they went up against the hottest team in the National Hockey League that looks like it's the real deal in terms of the speed they play with, how exciting they are, how offensive they are. And yeah, they had to hang on for dear life, but you know what? They did it. And all the defensive metrics, especially since, you know, that bad stretch that they had to start the season, all their defensive metrics in the National Hockey League are top third of the league, top quarter of the league. So whatever you want to say about what's going to happen in the playoffs, whatever baggage you want to bring to the thing, in the moment, Toronto Maple Leaf fans should be absolutely ecstatic with where things are at right this moment. But they can't enjoy it because they're Leafs fans and they know that there's something better on the corner.
Bobby, what do you think of the state of the league, like just as far as player movement? I mean, you got a team in Toronto who made a minor deal, I guess you could call it, with Connor Timmins coming in. The Ottawa Senators are dying for a defenseman. They can't win a game, and they can't pull the trigger on a deal. Like, it's just amazing the lack of movement. I mean, can you chime in as far as that's the salary cap and that's the way it is? Like, we were talking about like the Kings and the Leafs. Like, back in that day, a trade would, like, mix it up for everybody involved, fan base, media. It's just like, if you stink, you got to sit and rot.
It sure seems that way. But not being on the scene every day, I really don't know. I truly am the outsider. So I don't know whether it's salary cap related or whether it's a weird league. What I've noticed anecdotally myself, following a little bit from afar, is that the teams that we thought, teams that were traditionally very good, your Pittsburghs, your Washingtons, and let's be honest, at the beginning of the season, a lot of people thought Boston was going to be in that same category, getting older, longer in the tooth. You know, the Boston thing is a surprise to a lot of people, I think, the start that they've had. But we're so used to, you know, New Jersey. Everybody anticipated, well, New Jersey, they're no good. They're going to get better. Sure they are. Ottawa's going to get better. They haven't been. But, some of these teams that we expected, you know, Buffalo, and they had a bit of a losing streak there, but they're a fun team to watch. They're getting better and better all the time. A lot of the teams that have been absolute, you know, horse bleep for a long time are really on their way up. And a lot of the teams that we traditionally looked at as really good, and even some of the teams, like, where's Edmonton's game at right now? You know, where's Calgary's game at right now? These are teams that at the beginning, everybody was, when they started Stanley Cup favorites, a lot of people said Calgary Flames. Well, they could still be that, but I'm just saying a lot of the teams we expected to be really good haven't been as good as we thought they would be. And a lot of the teams we thought were going to be really bad, like Montreal was going to be just god-awful. And you know what? They're a 500 hockey team. The Chicago Blackhawks were just going to be god-awful, and they've kind of progressed back to where we thought they'd be to some degree. But they won a lot of games early on, and Taves and Kane are playing lights out. So the league is, I don't want to call it the parody, because there are teams that are getting better real fast, and there's some teams that are getting bad real fast. But nobody's as bad as we thought they were going to be, and maybe nobody's as good as we thought they were going to be. So everybody's kind of in this soft middle ground of I don't want to say mediocrity, because some of these teams are going to rise above the pack.
With Bob McKenzie, our TSN hockey outsider, he's again on the panel tomorrow. Leafs Wild, Carol Wagland, Cheryl Pounder. Oh, you're a part of that. Bob McKenzie, it'll be a great game tomorrow afternoon. Really difficult news today, obviously, with the passing of Boreas Salming, Bob, and there's a guy you would have, I don't know if maybe you were a fan of his first and then you covered him as a Toronto kid, but a legend of legends in this town, and was just here a couple of weeks ago, just an amazing scene. What do you recall of your time covering and being around Boreas Salming?
Yeah, before I even got into journalism, huge fan. So I was a kid, I grew up, I was born in 56. Grew up watching the Leafs and being a fan when I was a kid in the 60s. It was a good time to be a Leaf fan, as everybody knows, multiple Stanley Cups and Punch Imlach and Dave Keon. Tim Horton was my favorite player, Big M. I love the Big M, and lived and died with the Toronto Maple Leafs in the 60s. In the 70s, I was in high school, and then I went off to journalism school later in the 70s. But during that time, I still considered myself a Leaf fan. And so Boreas Salming, you know, burst onto the scene, whatever it was, 73, 74. And you couldn't help but just be captivated by everything that he did. For me, both as a fan in the 70s and then as a journalist in the 80s who also covered him, and obviously everything that I've done since then, most courageous hockey player I've ever seen. And the reason I say that is because I don't know that anyone, any of you guys, or anyone can fully understand the way the game was played in the 1970s. It was scary violent. It really was. I mean, the Philadelphia Flyers, the Broad Street Bullies, the things that went on in a hockey rink in the 1970s, if they happen now, Twitter and every social media platform and every media outlet in the world would burn to the ground, because it was total mayhem, and it was a dangerous place where guys were taking their physical health and their life every night playing against the Philadelphia Flyers or teams like them, and there was a lot of copycats that happened there. So here comes Boreas Almy and Ian Hammerstrom, comes into the National Hockey League in arguably its most violent era, and everybody says chicken tweeds and whatever. And the things that players did to Boreas Almy, they literally assaulted him. And, the playoffs that year in Philadelphia, I think it was, 76? Or was it 74, rather? And 74, 75, right around there. But anyway, I think it was Boreas's first year. And Mel Bridgman just beat him to a bloody pulp. And everybody went after him. And he just never backed down. He couldn't fight to save his life. And nothing deterred him. And so on that level, it was amazing. Now, in the history of hockey, he becomes an absolutely seminal figure because he is that pioneer. He is the guy who very early on, and it took decades for everybody else to wise up to it, but if you were paying attention to Boreas Almy, what you realized is there was no such thing as a chicken sweep. There was no such thing that Europeans are not wired to compete and have the fortitude, the intestinal fortitude of Canadians. He put it all to rest, and he put it all to rest almost immediately. And then on top of that, he was a Hall of Famer in the way that he played. He was an unbelievable physical specimen, an elite defenseman, one of the very best in the game. And he was also just an absolutely tremendous guy and tremendous teammate. And the 70s were an interesting time to be a Leaf fan because the team wasn't great. They never really were greater than the sum of their parts. But they had Sittler, they had Lanny, they had Tiger Williams, they had Ian Turnbull, they had Boria. They were fun to watch, and there was a lot of personality and a lot of swagger on that team, but they never really did the kind of damage that you thought that group might do, and then Earl Ballard kind of started to blow the whole thing up, and it self-destructed. But even Harold couldn't tire of Boria. He tired of just about everybody else and sent them all on their way, but he had a special... trusty old partner that he was, he had a special, special place for Boria. And there should be a special place for Boria in all of hockey history because he really was the face of the globalization of hockey in the 1970s. That's when the game, 1972 forward changed the way hockey was viewed on a world basis. And Boreas Almy was... an unbelievable pioneer. He was this Viking warrior who redefined what toughness in hockey was. Toughness in hockey wasn't hitting somebody or fighting somebody or taking advantage of somebody. Toughness in hockey was defined as you can give me as much physical, mental, and emotional abuse as you want, and it's not going to change my game one little bit, and I'm still going to play at a Hall of Fame level no matter what you do to me, no matter how many times he got bloodied like Mel Bridgman bloodied him. And keep in mind when I talk about the 70s, and that was the game that four Philadelphia Flyers were charged and taken off to court. Willie McMurtry, the Attorney General of Ontario, and Selesky and Kelly and Joe Watson and Mel Bridgman, they all got charged with assault. Now, one of them was assaulting a police officer, but that's another story for another day.
Wow. Yeah, that is another story for another day, for sure.
Slapshot.
No kidding. Yeah. Well, look at the pictures of Mel Bridgman. It's exactly what you think.
Mustache.
It looks like. Yeah. Well, Bob, we'll catch you on the panel tomorrow. There'll be obviously a lot more, and I believe the pregame on the legacy of Boreas Salming, and Leafs Wild tomorrow to be a fun one. So it's always great having you on. Welcome back up to Toronto, and we'll do it again soon. Thank you, buddy.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and thanks for letting me talk about Borea, because he was an all-timer and just a special, special Toronto Maple Leaf and a special, special NHL player.
Yep, absolutely. There he is, our good friend Bob McKenzie, and that's exactly who you want to hear from about Bob represents, you know, from yeah. Toronto, grew up a Leaf fan, covered the Leafs. You know, everyone, I'm sure, your dad's got stories about Salming. My dad's got stories about Salming and when he came over and the way he played and how great he was. And I mean, he was unbelievable as a player.
Dude, I'm sure that your dad and my dad, we could sit down with them and there's honestly a month worth of stories from the 70s until now. Mm-hmm. Like a month pod of what they saw and what it was like following and just all of it, like the Ballard, Borea, all of it. Like it's
crazy.
It was their life, as sports fans.
That's it, man. I mean, the Gardens, what that represented, and that's the beauty of the Leafs. I mean, it's like any other Original Six team or longstanding sports organization. When you're around forever, you get generations that, you know.
Craziness, though. Craziness.
Exactly. You've seen so many different things. You know, if you're 80 years old, think about how much you've seen. If you're if you're 15, you know, you haven't seen much, but you've seen enough. Like, honestly, if you're 15 and you've been tracking the last 6-7 years, you've seen some wild stuff. Yeah. You know, you can put your hand up and say, I'm a Leaf fan. Like, I've been through the ringer here, you know. So, anyway, great to catch up with Bob.